Thank you. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first bi-weekly meeting after a long hiatus. We're going to mostly be talking about the internal release of RC10. And we'll go a little bit deeper into why it's an internal release. So bear with us and have a snack. Of course, today we'll also talk about the Iroha One happenings, particularly the internship program that Gregor is heading, and his student, Andrei, who has completed his task on creating an Iroha One library, which Gregor is going to present after this, once the microphone issues have been sorted out. So, RC10 is an internal release. Why? It either has too many or too few changes to the API to be qualified. Most of the changes are under the hood. They have already been backported into the LTS. So there was no point in creating a release for two, maybe three changes. Although those changes are beneficial for the API, they enrich the events system and they add a lot more depth to numerical types. Unfortunately, they didn't themselves warrant the amount of work that would be necessary to update the SDKs. So we decided not to release RC10 to the public. Instead, we are just going to use it as a sounding board for review ideas. RC11 is coming when it was supposed to. Naturally, we're going to talk about it next week, next fortnight rather, when we'll have a set amount of features that will be changed. So what have we found? We have identified a duplication bug, which was causing quite a bit of a headache, actually. It can, in some cases, cause a large Genesis block to just be rejected outright. And it turned out that the zombie Genesis bug, which was referred to as a zombie Genesis because of the way it acted, wasn't itself a single bug. It was actually several. And this is one of them. Of course, given that we've identified a small issue with how the P2P system worked, primarily the fact that it could be denial of serviced, we have started working on making it more in line with the architecture of Sumeragi and less in line with the Actor system. And we're backporting this to the LTS. We have much better handling of fixed point operations. We're going to add exponentiation to the mix, which is going to use arbitrary precision and perhaps add a better precision fixed point numbers. We have better user experience for numeric operations and values. Particularly, now all assets that are of numerical types are their own type, numerical value. These values, of course, will be extended, and there will be room for extended precision, like I mentioned previously. Iroha now self-reports diagnostics on startup. That includes both the health check, the Git hash from which Iroha was built, which should be sufficient to any developer to figure out what's wrong. We'll be adding information to this as we go. Perhaps we should also consider adding feature sets, but those should not affect the API. They are only for debugging purposes. Of course, we've done the bare minimum, and hopefully that bare minimum is what will be sufficient. Query for a total amount of any given asset. This is primarily useful for a blockchain explorer type application where you want to be able to investigate the liquidity of the entire blockchain rather than do specific things to specific accounts. This is not as precise as it can be. We might extend this to use arbitrary precision as well if we need to. But the low precision is good enough for a ballpark estimation. And if you're interested in broad stroke statistics, this is sufficient for your purposes. The Iroha One internship is done and dusted. Like I said, Gregor is going to present the work done. Perhaps there will be a more thorough explanation of what was actually done, but keep in mind this is related to Iroha One. So if there are any users of Iroha One, they might be more interested in this than the rest of what we're talking about. We have fixed quite a few minor bugs in this release as well. And we have reviewed the other internship related to Iroha Swarm. In fact, these 3 points are related to external contributors, 8, 9, and 10. Unfortunately, the Iroha Swarm that was created by the external contributor is in no way, shape, or form usable as is. It needs to be refactored and very much written from scratch. Of course, we've identified opportunities to reduce WebSocket communication noise. We removed one round trip. We've added a few extra guardrails, which would prevent communication between binary compatible peers to go through the handshake and end up in a deadlock situation where half the peers cannot understand what the hell they're supposed to consent on, and therefore no consensus passes. This is very useful for later Byzantine fault tolerance as well, given that networks will often have binary incompatible peers thrown in just for the kick of it as an audit measure. Now, permission events are emitted for alls too. What does that mean? Well, if you had a trigger that was supposed to monitor a specific permission being added or revoked from a user, previously that would have only triggered if you were specifically explicitly removing that permission. If the user was revoked a role which granted him that permission, you would not get an event. And this is semantically incorrect. We fixed it. We've refixed the 2 out of 5 potential bugs that are related and symptomatically similar to Dezombie Genesis. We've added a limit on the size of the Genesis block. We've added some guardrails to prevent the Genesis from being committed when it contains incorrect transactions. Duplication bug, as I said, is in progress. It's actually a bit of a difficult one to fix, given that we need to restructure the WorldSafe view. And there's work ongoing on this. Of course, better mutexes or mutexes. It turns out that the Rust standard library mutex is jack of all trades, but it isn't very well specialized for what we are actually using mutexes for. So we have found a few potential candidates which could improve throughput, which we will be testing. As another bonus, if you're using this in the WebAssembly context, well, not in the WebAssembly context, if you're trying to fork Iroha and add some extra stuff to it, the new mutexes are supposed to be more ergonomic as well because they cannot be poisoned. We also have the Blockchain Explorer demo happening very soon. Well, actually, we already had the Blockchain Explorer demo. We've completed it. We've recorded it. The version that is internal has already been circulated. The version that will be available to the public will be circulated very soon. Just to recap the state of the project, it is perfectly functional. It is up to date with the latest version of Iroha. It can work on a live environment. The only thing that it's missing is a synthetic environment which could demonstrate the behavior. But we made extremely good progress. In fact, Vladimir Bistin, who's with us today, he's made excellent work, working completely independently from the team on making this happen. And this has profound implications for testing as well. Of course, we need not forget about generic filter and judge combinators. This is going to be, the first one is going to be useful for if you want to combine arbitrary types of filters. We've already had this. In fact, the filter combinator API is what served as the baseline for the judge combinator. The only issue was that it was binary. We needed a ternary operation for judges, which will definitely refactor back to binary when we have the opportunity to do so. The idea being that if you want to know how to combine filters, judges are filters of a sort. You give them a transaction and they give you yes, no, I don't know, hence the ternary part. And if you want to be able to combine them to create complex permission sets, this is the way to go. It's not quite as in-depth as GraphQL would be, but GraphQL is a Well, it's good for queries. It's not very good for identifying whether or not a transaction should be passed through, especially given that GraphQL is extremely heavy and we needed something much more lightweight and specifically closer to what we have in-house. CNI is back online. We had a few issues in October and in November, beginning of November to be more precise, associated to the CI runners being taken offline. We've moved to a different host, which gives us more favorable conditions. In a sense, we have better machines and for cheaper. And this would allow us to restore some of the CI features which were disabled temporarily for Iroha 1. The only adjustment that needs to be made is that from now on, any changes made to Iroha 1 need to be made not via personal forks, like for Iroha 2, but actually via the feature branch in the main repository, Hyperledger/Iroha. So yeah, we're back online. We're continuing with making the CI process more quick, lower latency and higher throughput so that we can host more interns. So what is in progress? Runtime permission validators. We are in progress of moving everything that we had in terms of hard-coded Rust validators into WASM plugins. That's one step. Secondly, we haven't actually agreed upon what that system is going to look like, because some types of validators have persistent state, some don't. For those that don't, would benefit from not having to clean the persistent storage and the virtual machine for WebAssembly. What's more important, I actually don't think that we might necessarily end up using WebAssembly for this purpose. We have alternatives, and WebAssembly was chosen for smart contracts for different reasons. It might make sense for us to do something a little bit more in-depth for this. With Cactus interoperability, we are very much done. We are in the final stages of testing every single integration that we have. We're almost completely done. So this was a big project, and I have great respect to our senior developers, Sato-san and Mr. Versic, who have contributed very heavily to this. Sorry, I'm getting messages. What's going on? Yeah, sorry. WebAssembly dynamic linkage is on hold. Naturally, once we're done with Cactus interoperability, we will come back to this problem. And it's extremely likely that we will be in a position where we'll present dynamic linkage as its own presentation. Because writing WebAssembly is its own thing. Optimizing WebAssembly to take up less space is its own thing, but there's also the question of how to link with a provided library. And that library is going to be extremely heavy and difficult to integrate with. Of course, unified configuration interface, the library is supposed to make it extremely lightweight and easy to integrate with. You just need to know what to do. And that tutorial is coming. Sorry, I was distracted by your message. The unified configuration interface, we have moved most objects from configuration to ISI, meaning that these are network configurations and they are synchronized. We have not yet consolidated the world CPU, and we have not yet finished this process. And runtime upgrades of these are still quite a bit away because there's ordering issues. Do you execute these with every other transaction? What happens if you change the ordering of these transactions? And should you just define an ordering in such a way that everything that pertains to a configuration is the first transaction that gets executed in the block? Once we figure those questions out, this will be complete. The tutorial is almost fully up to date. We are good with sorting, pagination, and queries. We're not fully there yet with filtering. This is related to the fact that the filtering combinators are changing, and they are going to use the same API for query judges, and this is development documentation. We also have improvements to the load script. In fact, the most important changes out of the load script, because these are related to the testing and to the profiling that we're doing. We have diverse instructions. Now we can register assets, we can mint them, we can transfer them. We have more accurate transactions per second estimation. Still not as accurate as I'd like it to be, though. And we're still working on how to put this on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that this produces the right answer in most cases, and that's difficult, considering that we're mostly running this on weak machines, which do not have most of the assumptions that we can make, like multi-threading and so on. But we do have graceful shutdown. And this is very useful for when we are trying to check the extreme behavior of Iroha. And of course, there's a daemon mode, which has been added very, very late in the game, precisely because we wanted to, for lack of a better word, we needed to, because we didn't think that we would need one, because we didn't need that it would need to interface with it as if it were a daemon. It was enough to run it as a script. Given the way we want to restructure the longevity load testing, there had to be some concessions for re-entrancy, for recovering from failures if you still want to keep going, and so on and so forth. In terms of the UI and UX, there's quite a few pull requests in review right now. We have identified that in most cases, whenever we have a problem with Iroha, it's not actually related to any software bug. In fact, it is mostly related to the fact that the logging doesn't provide sufficient information. So how are we going to fix this? Well, first of all, every error needs to be either presented in a form that is addressable by the user, to lead to the termination of Iroha if it is a high priority error, or it needs to be ignored. And a clear explanation for why it is ignored needs to be provided in code. Otherwise, we run the risk of either handling too many errors and polluting the logs with too many error messages, which are not even error messages, or not providing enough feedback. In fact, point B, logging of all error conditions, is a next step. Right now, the way that it works is there are a few kinds of errors which get printed out with a full traceback, some don't. Some errors just get caught and ignored. Some errors get logged and ignored. And most of the time, we are dealing with situations where we don't even know how many errors can occur, do they occur, and when do they occur. As such, we are unable to provide good feedback to the user. What should you do if this error occurs? Which brings me back to point C. It's not enough to say that something went wrong. We, the developers, have the entire code base in our heads. That's just the way it is. Even though it should be said that we don't actually have the up-to-date version of the code base. The users do not, and whenever something goes wrong, they need to know what to do. OS error 11 tells next to nothing. Failure to bind to a socket tells the user that, okay, something is wrong, but they don't know what to do, what to check precisely. Do they need to check the firewall? Do they need to check for that specific port, and which specific port? Because in most cases, the error doesn't say which port it tried to bind to. It just says that it failed to bind to it. If a file is not writable, is it because the file doesn't exist? Is it because the block store cannot be found? There are next to no diagnostics, and we're trying to change that. And of course, believe it or not, there's very few ways you can check whether or not the trigger actually got executed. We have omitted this kind of event for security reasons, because if you were to be able to process the trigger executed event in the same block as this one, that could lead to infinite recursion, and we don't want that. Infinite recursion within one block commit. Infinite recursion in general isn't the problem. In order for the trigger executed event to be processed in the next block, there needs to be some extra pipework, which was laid down by Raman, one of our senior junior developers, let's just say. Of course, UI UX isn't everything. We've done some profiling as well. We've collected a lot of feedback, especially from Bogdan. We have identified several performance issues, which manifested as if they were bugs, but they're not. It's just that the peer is slow and it is not able to process the transactions on time, and therefore it rejects them. We're going to standardize testing on the longevity stunt to the extent to which between each release, each released version is going to go on the longevity stunt, and we should know if it has any particular issues that need to be fixed. Due to the fact that we were mostly featured and focused on feature releases and optimizations, namely the semi-regular structuring, the unit test coverage for most of our crates has gone down significantly. We want to bring it back to a reasonable amount. I think 65% unit test coverage plus integration test coverage should be enough. And of course, in some cases, we have identified that while on stronger machines, we perform better, on weaker machines, we performed worse, and we wanted to understand why. We still don't have a full picture for why that happened. One hypothesis is that the P2P was denial of servicing, but that isn't the only thing that could cause that sort of behavior, and we need to identify whether or not there are any other performance regressions, and of course, analyze them. So, if you're with us, then you probably have seen this exact slide several times in a row. We have been pushing these changes, unfortunately, for a very long time, and they have become a bit of a meme. But this time, cross my heart and swear to die, we're actually implementing them. The key-centric account restructuring is something that we'll start working on next week. We've already started some work in October. Unfortunately, that was postponed due to other projects. The local reputation system is coming. It's not coming necessarily in the immediate future, but expected to come early January, maybe mid-February. Offline transactions is something we have already started thinking about. The hardware solution is something that we've worked on and off since June. The solution seems sound. It just needs to be settled. So we cannot really say that we've done this. But there's also the issue of hardware being really expensive and not really suitable for cases where you would expect offline transactions to be useful. That is why we're working on a software solution. And the software solution takes a lot longer. We kind of have to start doing this already, but I don't expect us to make any significant progress until January. The parachain compatibility, specifically substrate parachain compatibility, is coming, but it will take a while. Of course, you also have to take into account that the Polkadot protocol has changed significantly since we started working on this. And Soramitsu as a company has changed its position with relation to the substrate parachain, so we have a little bit more leeway and we have a little bit more influence. As a drawback, that means that we have to do more work. Of course, transaction fees and bootstrap peers. Bootstrap peers is probably the first thing off this list that we'll go into in progress. And with that out of the way, the Iroha 2 presentation is complete. If you have any questions, now is the time to ask them. Anyone? Okay. Now that we've done this, I transfer the screen to Gregor.
But hello everyone. We have two interns, so they would present their work. But I would like to ask you to cut the. Probably for Hyperledger, I don't know what are those rules, but probably we need separate recording for each presentation. So I would like to ask for this.
Victor, I think we should stop the recording.
Sure.